Blog Talk Radio.
Hi there, everybody. This is Sally O'Cordy, and welcome to Public Advocate. Our show today is called Hear This Well, because the Hear This Well campaign has really changed the face of activism, and I'm very excited about it. From the minute the videos started to pour in response to Elizabeth Cohen, an anchor person for CNN or Fox, believe it or not, I don't even know, can't remember what channel it was, but regardless, she said that vaccines do not cause autism, and she said it in a very insulting way. Some people don't hear this well. Vaccines do not cause autism. So autism mothers and fathers poured out videos. Polly Tomey of the Autism Media Channel made the first one, and people picked up on it, and they kept making videos. And this is activism. This is activism from people who are basically can't get out of the house when they want to. You know, there's a lot of activism, and we'll talk about that in a little bit. But from people whose schedules and lives are truly not their own. Once you have a vaccine-injured child, that becomes your first concern, your first responsibility, and very often a 100% consuming issue that, you know, you just don't have the freedoms that that people without vaccine-injured children have. And, of course, Elizabeth Cohen had made this announcement instead of addressing the real issue, which was the CDC whistleblower coming out and admitting that they had found a clear link between the MMR vaccine and autism, and that it was causing a 340% increase in African-American boys. This was huge news. This is the largest whistleblowing story in the history of always. For the number of people that it has affected, literally millions of children around the world have been affected by autism thanks to the MMR vaccine. And this man basically had shame. And this, you know, it blindsided me. I didn't expect anyone ever, after decades of deceit, to come out and admit anything from within the industry. I just couldn't have expected anything less than someone with a conscience to step forward and say, I feel shame. And certainly that is the least of what he should feel, but it is a good expression nonetheless. He has also apologized to Andrew Wakefield, saying to him that he could have salvaged his career had he come forward sooner, because certainly Andrew Wakefield connected the MMR vaccine with autism. And for many years, Dr. Carley has been saying the measles vaccine, the single measles vaccine, and that has been revealed through Christina England, wrote an article about the fact that subsclerosing panencephalitis is autism, and it is being caused by the measles vaccine, and the you know, the literature that backs that up. So there's a lot of things that there's so much evidence. In fact, I have done two entire shows, one with Roger Landry about crimes against humanity by the CDC, and another one by Christina England about the criminalness of the CDC. So we are hanging our hats on their vaccine schedule as being a good thing for our children, when they couldn't be coming from a more compromised agency than the CDC. So I had the Honorable Cynthia McKinney on my program, and I wanted her to speak about the increase in the African-American male population. And the fact that one of the researchers beyond William W. Thompson, who was the CDC whistleblower, there was a Marsha Lynn Alsop, who was a black woman who was on this study as well and knew the results. and participated in the cover-up. Of course, the cover-up being driven by Julie Gerberding, who was the then head of the CDC, who did not allow William W. Thompson to make a speech about these findings. And she now works for the manufacturer of the MMR vaccine as an executive. So, I mean, this stinks to high heaven in every regard. And autism mothers have taken to the airwaves in the best way they can through alternative media, through YouTube. So everybody is, you know, just bursting with activity. And one of the people I'm about to interview today is Eric Nanskill. Eric Nanskill made a one-minute video. They're all very short videos. And this is evidence. This is the evidence that Bill Posey, representative from Florida, is asking for. And I am saying to everybody who's made a video, first put your kids in the video, because nothing you can say will ever compare to the child's actual behavior. But even if not, certainly, it's evidence. You are giving him the evidence he is seeking. He has got a lot of information at this point from the CDC, which is incriminating. And he's going through, I think, what, 100,000 documents? I don't know. A lot. But I really have to call the man and say, I would like to volunteer, help you go through these documents, and, do whatever I can to expedite a resolve. And until such a resolve has been reached, we must nullify the CDC vaccine schedule. So let me get back to Cynthia McKinney, because what she said is the crux of the issue. She said, the science is good as long as the humans behind the science are ethical. This is the crux of the issue, ethics. And if these people do not have ethics, if they're hiding known results that are indicating vaccines cause autism, and 13 years have passed since this study, how many millions of children are affected? And beyond the MMR vaccine, is anything they do reliable? So this is literally couldn't come at a more essential point in history, because the Ebola vaccine is, they're promoting a vaccine for Ebola. Well, Dr. Tom Olgenovic's study, revelation through the Freedom of Information Act, says the intention is to give you the disease they claim to prevent. And I will ask you to refer to the numbers on mumps, and how many people who have mumps were inoculated against it. And whooping cough, the immense percentage of people with whooping cough who received the pertussis vaccine or the DTaP. DTaP is about the most dangerous vaccine in the young people. Very serious reactions to this vaccine, as several people I have interviewed can illustrate. But so there is a big issue. It's also come in time for those of us in New York. We are fighting currently, and I will give you an update on that, the flu mandates in New York City for the very youngest, the flu shot mandates, and it has no benefit for truly young children, and it has no benefit, period, for anyone, because it's all poison, as all of these vaccines are. 100% poison, causing all diseases in internal medicine. And the intention on every front has been outed as clear as day. So the evidence is all on the side of people who are anti-vaccine. I call myself an anti-vaxivist. I just read something that Marcella Piper Terry wrote saying, anti-vaccine, own it. Yes, be proud of that. I am very proud to be an anti-vaxxer. And I hope that everybody who is against them does wear it as a badge of honor. You should. So, anyway, Eric will be my guest in 10 minutes. And there are a lot of different events that we have for October Vaccine Injury Awareness Month that have already transpired and will be transpiring. Okay? So just bear with me while I pull up the list of events that we've already done. My blog is Billion with a B, Billion Toddler March for Survival.blogspot.com. And I would like to tell you some of the actions that have already transpired. And if you are going to take action, please let me know you are, because I will help you promote the action that you're taking. So let's see. On October 1st, I interviewed Michelle Taff Schneider, and she and her, the people who run the page CDC Community, Whistleblower Community, they had a 24-hour Twitter storm on for October Vaccine Injury Awareness Month, and that was fantastic. Then on October 3rd, there was an event that I was trying to tell people to come to, but couldn't say what the name of the film was, nor could I say who the director-producers were. And that's because this film has been entire film festivals have been shut down to keep this film, okay? Let me tell you what it is. It's Dr. Andrew Wakefield. And Polly Tomy, Dr. Andrew Wakefield, of course, had his license removed from making the link between the MMR vaccine and autism, which, of course, now the whistleblower has revealed is the truth. And Polly Tomy is the lady who started the Hear This Well campaign, and she has a list of credits to her name that is as long as my hair. If you've seen my hair, you'll realize that's pretty long. Anyway, so on October 3rd, they had a film showing of Who Killed Alex Sportalakis. And this is an earth-shattering film. It is an earth-shattering film from my perspective, because this poor child was so abused by the medical mafia that I don't have words. You really kind of have to see it yourself. But he was, you know, basically detained and strapped down and restrained while they administered, on top of his autism, parents had gotten him to a place where he was a happy autistic child by the diet they were the diet he ate, which was a restricted diet, a very restricted diet. However, he was a happy child. A pediatrician recommended that he get reintroduced to things he used to be allergic to, which they were told was because allergies passed with time. His behavior started to turn erratic, and he was put on medications, and then prescription drugs from the doctors, and he turned violent and erratic and no longer a calm, happy child. And the more he exhibited erratic behaviors, the more medications were prescribed, including medications for things he didn't have. He didn't have seizures, and he was not bipolar. These were medications that were prescribed. And so 25 pharmaceutical products altogether, one of which his mother knew he was allergic to, and he was removed from his mother when she said he cannot have that because he has a recorded allergy to it. So this is just the saddest story you could possibly imagine. I wept, I sobbed after this movie, because I related to it, because this child was detained for 76 days in captivity, if you will. My sister was in captivity for 20 years. So I came to find out after the people who were testing drugs on these children that that is what was happening to her in the institutions that she was in. So this was extremely upsetting to me as I looked at the distressed, as Alex Bortolakis's distressed face, recognizing that look on my sister's face and putting, you know, everything in regard to autism, everything in regard to mental retardation, severe mental retardation in my sister's case, all of these things come out after the fact. Nobody's got, you know, the lowdown. Everybody's playing catch-up with what's causing these ailments and how to treat them and what will be have negative outcomes and terrible repercussions. It's like the medical industry knows it all, but we don't know it all until it's too late. So my heart goes out to this lady, and Polly Tomey or Andrew Wakefield, one of them, will get me her address. I will definitely write to her and to the aunt who were basically railroaded into an outrageous final result, and that is that Alex Bortolakis was killed by his mother and or aunt. They left a note. The mother had been put on antidepressants, and where she had been positive and strong throughout all of this, you could see her reaction to the prescription drugs took a huge toll, and she did not look herself at all. So I can't tell you how incriminating this film is, and I can certainly see where entire film festivals have been shut down to keep it from airing. So anyway, we also have had other events. My friend Sarah Carrasco had a poster showing at a busy intersection in Denver with Ronnie Prime. That is beautiful. She's standing there at an intersection with a giant sign that says vaccines are not mandatory. Rightio, Sarah. And Ronnie Prime wearing his T-shirt that says, "Know before you vaccinate." One, the digit four, Eric, vaccineinjury.com, with a picture of a hand holding a syringe. Then we went at my friend James Jones' recommendation. He was marching in the Pulaski Day Parade, and he said that they welcomed us, and I thought that was great because we went to the St. Patrick's Day Parade with our signs that say vaccine-free NYC, and we got a very big reception there. I have to tell you, about a third of the paraders themselves were giving us thumbs up, yay, you know, really enthusiastic reception. One little lady who was extremely elderly with a, this was in the St. Patrick's Day Parade, with a feather boa, a Kelly Green feather boa, came over and she said, "You girls are upstarts or troublemakers," or something like that. And she, of course, gave us the, "We're not upstarts. We're trying to save our children. We're trying to say, I want grandchildren who are healthy. You know, my kids are grown. My kids have, believe me, lesser injuries from vaccines than the other parents I have been interviewing. But none of them have worse injuries than my sister's. She was a very severe case. And my mother didn't figure out it was a vaccine until I was years old." Wow, that's amazing that she didn't figure out what it was that caused my sister, after an annual checkup, to look away and never look back. And, of course, all of the tremendous peculiarities in her behavior that ensued. But anyway, so then during the month of October, my friend Dina Marie, whose child is basically the pinnacle of everybody's religious and medical exemptions here in New York City, in a way, because her child, who is vaccine injured, had both a medical and a religious exemption, and she was stripped of both, even though she has a very compelling letter from her doctor saying she cannot be vaccinated again. So the attorney for Dina Marie, Patricia Finn, made a presentation on October 3rd to three judges in the Second Circuit Court at 40 Center Street in Foley Square on October 7th. That was October 7th. The parade was October 5th. The action at the court was October 7th. But I didn't realize this was supposed to be about one issue, which was an issue she added on to the other issues. So I'm very concerned because the issue of flu shots is only for New York City. The issue of Dina Marie is for exemptions for all of New York State. And we were in, I don't know if it was a federal court. So I'm a little bit confused about the different jurisdictions, and I am hoping, beyond hope, that none of them fall by the wayside. I hope that all of this can be achieved. But basically, it was to undo what was transpiring that day was to undo the mandates, flu shot mandates for the youngest, 6 months through 5 years, in order to attend daycare through kindergarten. There is no issue that is bigger in my life right now than that lone issue. Oh, let me pick up. I hope this is Eric. Yes, it should be wonderful. Okay. Hello, is this Eric?
Yes, hi.
Would you pronounce your last name, Eric?
Hi, Sally. This is Eric Nansteel.
Thank you. I didn't want to say it incorrectly, so it was important that you say it. Well, you have made a very important video that Dorina Piazza Randall brought to my attention and told me I had to interview you. I had hoped she would be joining us today, but for whatever reason, she is not. And all I can say is that's okay. Well, I'll talk to her another time, but she at least brought us together, which is wonderful. So you right now are experiencing what most parents of vaccine-injured children are experiencing, which is you are losing your home.
Yes, I know this is not unique to my situation. I have several friends out there in the autism community that have lost homes and cars. It's not rare in this community.
Right. In fact, especially, I ask every single parent I interview, I'm like, have you lost your home yet? Are you in foreclosure? You know, it's just a standard question I ask of vaccine-injured parents.
Yeah, I've lost an automobile recently to repossession as a result of my falling behind. You know, single parent and a single income household, and just doing the best I can. But you know, I've got some irons in the fire, but they're not lucrative yet, and it's a real struggle.
Well, I see that you've raised almost $2,000 of the $9,000 you're trying to through the GoFundMe, and I have that link directly under the screen. So anybody who opens the link to this interview, just scroll down and you'll see the link to GoFundMe. Now, Eric, your story is really, really more tragic than most. Will you kindly tell our audience what the situation is in regard to vaccines and your child's damage and the other very tragic outcome?
Well, the story of I guess you could say the tragedy of what happened with my family began in January of 2000. My daughter was vaccinated at the age of 15 months with five or six vaccines, which included the MMR, the measles, mumps, rubella vaccine, and the DTaP, diphtheria, tetanus, and pertussis. And she, you know, she regressed within a week. She had a high fever that started about an hour after her vaccines. You know, it got up to 104 at one point, and it had the high fever for 5 days straight. And when the fever broke, she lost everything, her early speech, her eye contact, her desire to be touched, just completely regressed. We knew something was wrong right away. But it wasn't for a few more months before we got an official diagnosis of autism. And Miranda had a very severe case, still does. But what made this whole thing worse was 3 weeks later, her mother, Miranda shed the measles virus, which has been known to occur, at least in our community, autism community that's aware of vaccine safety issues. We know that measles is a virus that children can shed and be infectious with after vaccination. And so my daughter shed the measles virus, and we know this for a fact because we found those measles titers in her brain and spinal fluid, and it triggered MS in Miranda's mother. And the next 7 years were just hell. I was taking care of both of them as caretaker, and it was very, very difficult. Now her mother's in a nursing home, so her care has been entrusted to people who are more qualified than me, and I can just focus on my daughter's care.
Right. How far away does your wife in a care home?
Well, she's my ex-wife because, we had a bad marriage to begin with, but the divorce allowed her to be fully funded, obviously, through Medicare. But so my ex-wife, Miranda's mother, is down the street, actually, maybe about 4 or 5 miles away. So not too bad. I mean,
good. Yeah. I was just talking about who killed Alex Bortolakis and saying it's very hard for people who have family members who are institutionalized in any way to watch mm-hmm. this, because not every institution is a good place
to
be.
I saw the film. Yeah, Andy screened it for me in his hotel room.
So you know of which I speak. You know.
Yeah, I know all about Alex's story, and it's beyond heartbreaking, beyond tragic. You know, it's a tragedy for everybody involved. I call it
enraging, because it's beyond tragic. I mean, the deliberateness of so much of it, and the one woman who could help, wanted to help, was silenced and taken off the case, you know? So it's mm-hmm. like the one ray of hope they had was so probably disciplined, you know?
Working with Andy Wakefield through the years as his cameraman on occasion, I've come to learn of similar tragedies. People that he's interviewed. There is a mother in Phoenix, Arizona. I'm not going to use her name. I know her name, but I'm not going to use it. I'll say her first name was Shauna. But she had three children, two of which were severely autistic, but CPS took her children away because she got on the bad side of a CPS agent, Child Protective Services. And so she had her children taken away, and two of them died in separate foster care homes. One died on a peanut butter sandwich because nobody told the foster parent that the kid had a peanut allergy. And the other kid drowned in
Which is an outcome of vaccines. We must say that is an outcome of vaccines while we're talking
these kids were vaccine injured, autistic. But, I've been learning of tragedies, you know, in these families, you know. And then there's, like, the Arizona Five. I've met them working with Andy You know, when people are pursuing biomedical interventions to help reverse their children's vaccine injury, and which actually does quite often improve their cognitive functions and their abilities, I wouldn't call it a cure, but, you know, some children do recover. But anyway, families that attempt this biomedical intervention, you got to be careful who you tell about what you're doing, because, you know, it gets to the wrong person, and Child Protective Services is knocking on your door because they wonder why aren't you vaccinating? Why aren't you, you know, why are you doing this dangerous chelation or using bleach water, you know, to cure their gut or something? It's like, bleach water, please. You know, they get some misinformation about some of these biomedical interventions and just go after these parents. But this is an unfortunate community to belong to. But there is help around. You know, there's if you network with other parents, and like I've noticed today, you know, with my financial situation, there's a lot of parents out there that have been through it. Or know someone who's been through it and they're willing to help. And so, you know, God willing, with their help, you know, maybe I can save my daughter's home for her.
Well, what date is, you know, what date do you have until to raise funds?
Well,
do you have a cutoff date?
Well, Wednesday of next week, the 15th, is the day that the bank begins foreclosure proceedings, because I've missed 7 payments. I've not been able to catch up. And after you miss 2 payments, then they want the full amount. They won't let you, you know, catch up slowly by making 1 payment at a time. The system's actually designed to make you fall further behind, because once you're 2 payments behind, they want all 2 payments up front before you can make your 3rd payment. And then if you fall 3 payments behind, they want all 3 payments all at once before you can resume making normal payments. And that's just the way the banks work. So it's designed to make you slip further back. And, you know, and sometimes it's a challenge just paying utilities and stuff. You know, the salary I make was a livable wage for a single income household 10 years ago. But the cost of living has gone up, whereas at least in my industry, the graphic design, the wages have not gone up commensurate with cost of living, and so I'm falling behind.
Talk about what extraordinary expenses you have as an autism parent. What expenses do you know that other parents do not know?
Well, I used to do a lot of biomedical interventions to help my daughter's health. You know, I mean, you've heard of all of these, you know, hyperbaric oxygen therapy, IVIG, you know, intravenous immunoglobulin. There's a lot of expensive biomedical options that I used to do when I was married, and we had two household incomes, that just kind of put us in the poorhouse. We burned through a lot of our retirement savings trying to help my daughter. Today, my autism related expenses are not really much higher than what a typical child's might be. I do vitamin supplements, digestive enzyme supplements, things like melatonin to help my daughter sleep, because her mind is racing 24 hours a day. And the doctor that I take her to is a wonderful doctor down in Naperville, but she, as well as many doctors in the biomedical field treating kids with autism, a lot of them don't take insurance. And so, you know,
the next question, how much?
Insurance will cover normal medical expenses. Like if my daughter skins her knee and I take her into the emergency room, obviously insurance pays for things like that. But if I wanted to do, you know, like some of the more expensive biomedical interventions, it's very expensive, but I've not been doing much biomed at all with my daughter.
What about therapy?
The expense.
Does your like speech therapy? They have any number of therapists that work with autistic children. Do you utilize any of that? And if so, does your
we used
or
to.
Would you utilize it if your insurance covered it?
Yeah, well, yes, I would, absolutely. If I could get it covered, because I used to do ABA, speech therapy, occupational therapy, a limited amount of physical therapy, but my daughter doesn't really need the physical so much as occupational. But I would be doing all of those things, especially speech, because my daughter has been nonverbal since her injury, and she's now about to turn 16 years old, and she hasn't spoken a word since she was 15 months old. And I would enroll her in every helpful therapy possible. But when you're talking about an autism prevalence rate that is likely double what the CDC is saying, social services are not prepared to pay for these children's care when they age out of the school system. They're just not ready. I believe we have over 3 million children with autism on various ends of the spectrum in this country alone. And, I believe the rate's like 1 in 25, not 1 in 68 or 1 in 50. I believe it's 1 in 25. Mm-hmm. And when you look at the educational numbers, like 14% of all students in Illinois have an IEP. 14%. And it's huge. It was never like that before. I mean, you go.
What does IDP stand for? What does IDP stand for?
IEP is Individual Education Plan, and that's what schools put together for children with special needs in the public school system. And so my daughter has an individual education plan. And I remember in the 70s, we did have a special ed classroom, one special ed classroom in my school, and there was a Down syndrome kid, and there was a hyperactive kid. There was no autism. And now you can go to that same school, and they have two special ed classrooms, and they're filled with kids with autism.
You, I got a call from a teacher. It was an anonymous call. She said, I understand you care about children who are vaccine injured. I said, yes. And she said, well, I am calling you to tell you that from 1 year to the next, the special ed children there are six times as many.
Yes. And we can probably do a study of, because you can go to the State Department of Education website for any state in the union and data mine it for their statistics, and you can probably chart from year to year how many more special needs kids are in the system. Now, some of that is going to be expanded diagnoses, like, you know, they've added ADD and ADHD, and perhaps there was I believe there were a lot of fewer kids back in the day with ADD, ADHD, but I do remember some as a kid. There were some kids with attention deficits and hyperactivity disorders, but not nearly the numbers that there are now. But I think you could do a study of the educational numbers, and you could probably do a transparent overlay with the increase in vaccines starting in 1988. And when you see the number of vaccine doses going up after 1988, when they tripled the pediatric vaccine schedule, I bet you could do a plot line with the number of special needs kids in school districts, and I bet that they would match pretty closely.
Right, yeah. Well, I know that the number of vaccines has skyrocketed ever since the manufacturers of the vaccines have been exonerated from ever having liability by
right.
The Supreme Court re-upheld that in, what was that, 2011? They reauthorized that ruling or upheld it because they were afraid that the drug companies would stop manufacturing vaccines. Weren't you quivering at the fact that they might stop manufacturing vaccines? I know I was.
I appreciate your sarcasm, but I don't want to confuse anybody. I'll speak quite plainly and just say that I do not believe that they would give up that level of profit that they're making off these things.
No, you're right. Sarcasm should not even be touched. I shouldn't even touch things with sarcasm or irony in this regard, because there's enough confusion as it is.
Yeah, and in this community, in the autism community, you have a lot of people with Asperger's who don't even know what sarcasm is. They take everything literally. So
right,
you know,
right. No, your point is well taken, believe me when I say. In fact, I wrote a cheer called Vaccine-Free NYC, Make It a Reality, and I actually got locked out of Facebook because they troll for sarcasm. And, it was dark. It was dark because what is happening is dark, but to do it in the form of a cheer is, you know, what can I say? I don't protest. I cheer for a Vaccine-Free NYC, and in so doing, I'm telling people what's in the vaccines. I'm telling people who's not liable. I'm telling them everything that, you know, is real. And it's an odd thing to cheer about, but it's just driving home the point in every way conceivable that this has got to stop.
Yeah, the people making the money on the vaccines are calling all the shots, and they actually have some rather nefarious means for fighting this war, this debate over vaccine safety. I've been looking into it. There are dozens of public relations firms that specialize in the healthcare field, and they get hired by the vaccine makers, you know, Merck and Glaxo and companies like that. And they hire these PR firms to do the dirty work. So the PR firms hire bloggers to go out and start nasty arguments with parents. And
are you there?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Okay. Yes, there was some kind of an audio glitch, but you're fine now.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, well, I'm on a cell phone. I suppose that's part of it. Anyway, as I was saying, the pharmaceutical industry employs public relations firms who in turn employ bloggers to argue how wonderful and safe vaccines are. And these are people that should have no vested interest in the industry, but they defend it with vigor and or vinegar, I should say. I'm just dumbfounded by how nasty and horrible some of these people are that are blogging in defense of vaccines. They use the same talking points all the time that are not defendable scientifically. And whenever we show them something that would refute their claims to the contrary, they attack the messenger. They won't even go there, because if they do, their contention would unravel rather quickly. And you know, I have friends in this community that have all of the studies and all of the studies' flaws in their heads, every fact, every figure. They understand the toxicology, the pathology, the epidemiology, and could debate Paul Offit or Julie Gerberding or anybody you want to throw against us. And I would love for the mainstream media to get a qualified debate in the public's eye, but I know that won't happen as long as prescription drugs are advertised on television, because that's what gives the vaccine makers control over this debate in the media. The advertising.
We have 1 minute left, and just to back up what you said, I've always said any autism parent could debate an entire hospital filled with doctors and win. But what would you like to say in closing, please, at this juncture?
Do your research. I'm not going to tell you to vaccinate or not vaccinate. I've chosen not to, because I've studied vaccine safety for 10 years. And I've learned shocking, horrible, scary things that would take a long time to convey here. But just do your own research and make up your own mind. And don't be bullied by your doctors.
Yes. Eric Nansteel, Thank you very much for coming on this program. Thank you for making that video that really captured America's attention. And as a father, you were not one of many fathers who did speak out, so I was